Okay. We have available for you a printed copy of the Festival of Light, which is sitting over there. I thought this class would be a little smaller and involved with the people who are mostly involved, because this is not really something that necessarily people are going to think about unless they're involved with Ananda, but it still seemed like something worth going over, because there's so much in this ceremony, even though we hear it and see it performed on a very regular basis, nonetheless, we never have time in that context to discuss it. It's something that just comes in. Perhaps you think about it on your own. Perhaps you have even read the printed version of it, some of you, but nonetheless, a little bit of careful time looking at it. At the beginning, when Swami first wrote this, which was now quite a few years ago, it was the very end of 1986, he didn't want us to have any classes on it. He didn't want us to study it, because he didn't want us to intellectualize it from the start. He saw it more as a potential for attunement, and he didn't want to spoil that attunement. Vijay, you're sort of like exactly right behind James's head. He saw it as an opportunity for a more subtle kind of attunement. He didn't want to spoil that with too much intellectuality. Now, of course, after almost all of you have been listening to this for a long time, many of you for many years, it doesn't seem like a bad thing to put it on this level at this point. But it was very emphatic at the beginning, because a few of you may not know the history. I'll talk a little bit about how this came about. I read an interview with Swamiji not too long ago in which people were asking him about the festival. Swami wrote this, or received it is more how he would put it, in November of 1986. He was in seclusion in Assisi for a month during that time. And during that time, the inspiration came to him to write this ceremony. He also thought of the purification ceremony and also something called the superconscious attunement ceremony, which never actually took hold and sort of went away. But he thought of all three of them at the same time during that seclusion. He felt he was very much inspired by St. Francis. But most of all, it just came to him that now was the time to do it. He was asked whether he had wanted to have ceremonies prior to that time. Our Sunday service didn't have this ritual in it. In fact, the whole Sunday service was not nearly so systematic. There were no established readings. Every year, just a group of people made up service topics. And then sometimes the minister would make up their own topic. You'd find your own readings. And it just was a much simpler thing. But Ananda reached the point in its development, and these are all sort of part of what we're talking about when we talk about the festival. You know, Ananda started as a single rural community in the late 60s. And the ideas at that time, Swamiji was very much influenced by his experience in SRF in many different ways, not the least of which was that he was still holding out the thought that there might be a possibility someday that SRF and Ananda would be able to harmonize their efforts. And he was very conscious of trying to establish Ananda on some basis that would not be perceived by SRF as competing with them. Over many decades now, the hopelessness of being understood by them has become so strong that we don't really think about it now. But at the time, at the beginning especially, Swamiji thought, well, he would serve Master along lines that SRF was not doing, and in that way it would leave the doorway open for the two entities to merge back into being just one organization in time. So our concentration was really on the retreat and having a community, and it was much less on being a church or sort of reaching out beyond the borders of that community. It was much more having people come to us. But as time passed, and the possibility of working with SRF became more and more remote, and the demands of what we ourselves were doing became more and more imperative. A few centers started in Sacramento and in this area when we bought East West Bookstore, and in the city of San Francisco. And we just started reaching out beyond the borders of that community in a very different way. And Swamiji, who's given a tremendous amount of thought, I mean, tremendous amount of thought over the years to the ways in which Master's work could be spread, to the problems of institutionalism in religion, to really creating something that was new in Master's name that had never been done before. All of these different realities were much in his mind. And so he was always thinking about how Ananda could come about. And one of the limitations that is always true in any organization, especially perhaps in spiritual work, but really in any organization, is the difficulty of finding people who are leaders and finding people who are inspiring and finding people who have a sort of multitudes of talents on many different levels that are required for the kind of complicated work that we do. And also the difficulty of finding people who are genuinely spiritual, who have deeply spiritual consciousness, but may not necessarily also be gifted with the ability to speak, to be good public speakers. Because many people who can speak don't have any vibrations to share, and many people who have vibrations to share don't necessarily have the capacity to put words together. They're really not at all the same talents. And in a spiritual organization, one of the nemesis of it is that people who are merely talented in external ways rise to positions of influence, whereas people who are extremely talented in spiritual ways don't necessarily, just because of the way the world works. Of course, on this past Saturday, Swami talked about that at length, and if you missed that, you should get a tape from the Sangha office. Well, one of the as Ananda began to spread out a little bit more, and we began to have Sunday services in a number of locations, as more people got involved in playing the role of leading those Sunday services, Swami saw two problems developing. One was that because not all ministers were equally talented as speakers, the power and effectiveness and even the very message of the Sunday service depended so much on how that minister could put words together. And the second factor was because in the course of one Sunday service, the topic may necessarily be limited, may even be limited to something quite on the edge of the central teachings, secrets of success, how to get along with people, karma and reincarnation, I mean, the list is long, how to pray even, or something like that, that people who come just occasionally or come for the first time would often walk in and out of an Ananda Sunday service and never really have a clear idea of what the entirety of what was being offered. And even individuals involved sort of didn't have, even involved for a long time, didn't necessarily have any clear point of focus on which they could hang their spiritual hat, so to speak, and just repeatedly on a long-term basis just sort of get a deeper and deeper understanding in ways that aren't just intellectual of what the experience is. And for this reason, Swamiji always had it in the back of his mind that ceremony would be beneficial. And he said that Master favored ceremonies, but he just always wanted to keep them simple. He didn't want to go into the, you know, the mistakes of the Vedic rituals and so on. I know one of our Indian friends comments about Hinduism, that Hinduism is one of the few religions in the world that people can't practice on their own because it's so complicated and so overrun with rules that you have to hire a priest who knows how to do the ceremonies before you can actually even do them, which of course is a very sorry state of affairs because religion is not about you and the priest, it's about you and God. So Master favored ceremony, but having been raised in that tradition, he didn't want to go that direction, but he knew that to ritualize certain basic experiences and allow people to go over them again and again and again causes it to sink in on an ever deeper level until it becomes more an instinctive understanding than merely something that you know with your mind. And so for all the years of Ananda, Swamiji had always had in his mind that we should have some ceremony, but he never felt the inspiration to do it until the time came, this time in November in 1986, and then it was the moment, the astral moment for it to happen. There was another thought I wanted. Let me think of it for a minute. I can't recall now. You know, Master himself created the Kriya ceremony, just so you sort of think about Master's relationship to ceremony. Those of you, almost all of you, who have taken Kriya initiation, it's a ceremonial event. with certain elements in place, fire ceremony and a blessing and an offering. And Master himself created that ceremony. It wasn't necessarily done by the gods. It was done by him in order to bring in just enough elements. And you can sort of see from the Kriya ceremony sort of where Master stood in the ceremonial ideas and how different it is from an elaborate ritual. And yet each of those pieces, which most of us do at least once a year, if not more often, have deep significance for us. And all of us, we sort of feel them and we know what they are and we look forward to participating in it, so much so that we don't think of it necessarily as a ritual. I mean, even as I was saying, Kriya is a ritual, I could see people saying, oh yeah, I suppose it is. Because for us, it's a living experience. Now, the challenge of ritual is twofold. One is that people will become so habituated to it that they'll go to sleep. And the other is that they will use it only in an external way. And so, as Swami said, a ceremony is useful if people use it as a doorway for inspiration. But it's not useful if people just stop there and just think, well, because of this ritual, now I've done something. In the Catholic Church, for example, you know, the very going to Mass has become the definition of being a good Catholic. And not going to Mass has been the definition of not being a good Catholic. But nobody asks what you're doing when you're at Mass and whether you're really having any experience or not, or whether you're just showing up. I'm reminded in this context of a girl who went through the Ananda Elementary School and Junior High at Ananda Village and then went to the local public high school at that time. And people have always been concerned that if children are educated in the Ananda system or grow up in the Ananda community, that they won't be able to cope when they go into the real world. And so she immediately became an honor student, and when I saw her name listed as being in the honor roll in our community minutes, the next time I saw her, I congratulated her, and I just asked her how in general it was going. And she remarked that the public school, compared to Ananda, was so easy. She said, at the public school, all you had to do was, you know, answer the test questions correctly, and you got good grades. She said, at Ananda school, you were held accountable. She said, it wasn't enough to do your math accurately. You also had to do it with a joyful attitude. And it wasn't enough just to show up in class every day. You also had to be willing and enthusiastic. And you just couldn't get away with this sort of little tiny band of accomplishment that the public school asked. And so, in our context, it's not enough. We're not going to tell you that you'll get to heaven just by showing up. And most importantly, you have to understand within yourself that if you begin to find situations uninspiring that formerly you found inspiring, the first question to ask is, what am I doing with my consciousness, not what are they doing with the ritual? Because yes, it is challenging. There's no question about it. That is the challenge of the spiritual path, is not to run out of steam. We sort of have the honeymoon period or beginner's luck or whatever you want to call it, or God's grace to show you the end of the book so that you'll be interested in reading from the beginning. But nonetheless, the power of it really is not necessarily inherent. The power of it is what we give to it. And this is what I was trying to remember a moment ago. Swamiji also made a very interesting comment in his little interview I read about the ceremonies, the other reason why he presented them. And I think this is worth contemplating, all of us who are in the habit of going to group meditation. Swamiji said, ritual is important also because it helps people, when they come together, participate not only for themselves, but for the sake of others. It draws the energy more to a focus. And he commented that very often, even when people meditate in groups, they don't meditate as a group. Each person just simply sits there and meditates without thinking about taking a wider responsibility for magnetizing the whole group together. For example, he said a person will allow their mind to wander or become sleepy or have negative thoughts and not stop to consider the fact that in doing so, they're pulling down the whole group and not necessarily making the effort for the sake of others to meditate even more deeply so that everyone will be lifted up. I know Swamiji commented at some point that he'd begun, this was a number of years ago, that he'd begun an experiment that he found very beneficial, which was that when he meditated with a group of people, he tried to meditate for everyone. He tried to literally be in everyone's consciousness and help lift everyone's awareness up instead of merely meditating within himself, for himself. So the benefit of an interactive ritual of some kind is that it makes people more conscious of the fact that we are doing this together, and potentially at least will inspire people to put out energy for the sake of the whole group. I mean, I feel it. I'm so often in the front, of course, where it's natural to appreciate that we're doing this all together and that we're doing it for each other. But at those times when I sit in the congregation too, I often think in terms of participating in the prayers and singing the songs and just really paying attention, that if I space out, then the whole room gradually goes dead. And certainly, and all of you have certainly experienced that, there are times when the festival on Sunday is extremely dynamic, and there are times when it isn't. And really, it's the same ritual, so it really is about the collective consciousness of people involved, and you can just hear it right from the start, whether people are going to be with it or not, and whether they're going to really pray with dynamic attention, whether they're really going to sing with their whole hearts, and just make it happen. And of course, when we all make it happen, it really happens. And then we think, wow, this is a great experience. And when we're not making it happen, we think there's something wrong with what's going on, not realizing the role that we ourselves are playing in it. So the other element of this ceremony when it came into being was that it was an interesting transition period for Ananda, because it was Swamiji's, it was a very expansive period. It was just before David and I came to this area. It was literally just at the time that our work in Italy was moving from Lake Como in northern Italy, which really was a very unsuitable location, but a place where a place was given to us to use, but it really didn't work. We were actually at Lake Como for almost 3 years, but Swamiji saw that, as he put it, we needed more power around us, and the spiritual heart of Italy is, of course, is Assisi, especially from our point of view. So they made the decision, which took them about a year or half a year to... First of all, they were in Lake Como, which is a resort area. It's a vacation area. It's not a serious spiritual area. People come there for holiday. They don't come there for pilgrimage. Secondly, the place that we had the use of belonged to a member of our group over there, and it was a summer home. It was not really insulated properly for winter, and the winters were extremely rigorous, and the snow was very deep, and no one came, and it was very hard. The holy water would freeze on the altar, as they would say. It got a little better as the years progressed. They made a little better use of it. And then the third thing was that the woman who was allowing us to use the house owned it in common with her siblings, and they wanted to sell it, so it was being sold out from under us. So everybody got together, and Swamiji and everyone meditated on it, and they had been traveling by that point all over Italy, and of course Assisi was the place that everyone loved because of the vibrations. It was just so magnificent. And Assisi is a place where people come for serious spiritual purpose. I mean, it's a bit out of the way. It's a wonderful, huge tourist magnet, but they're spiritual tourists. That's why you go there. It's not about the shops or the restaurants or anything like that. And besides, it had inherent power. And Swamiji thought, inasmuch as many of our people there were, we were just, you know, trying to make an impact in such a big way with such a small group, that the more help we had from the environment, the better. And this was also, it was in 1983 that Swamiji visited the Holy Land with Rosanna and felt inspired at that time to write the oratorio. And Rosanna and her family were all part of this charismatic Catholic group in southern Italy called Pecci. And they, we developed an alliance. Ananda developed an alliance with that group. And in fact, our work in Italy started out as a joint venture between the two groups. And the influence of Pecci on Ananda, because they were Italians, above all, was to put Ananda into a much more heart-centered orientation. In fact, during that time, Swamiji expressed the thought that he thought it was going to be of enormous benefit to Ananda to have a work, especially in Italy, and for Americans to be exposed to the Italian temperament, because it was so much more devotional, but just naturally, and so much more heart-oriented, so much less intellectual, so much more about experiencing the divine, so much less about accomplishing things. And he said he thought that there would be some benefit for Italy, for the Italians and this devotional Christian group to be exposed to the American way, but he thought it would be much more beneficial for the Americans to be exposed to the Italian way, which in fact that whole influence has really had a lot of influence on Ananda in many, many different ways.